time, folks. Greetings. 11:29:15. Incendiary Radio chat room, incendiary chat dot chatango dot com, incendiary radio dot chatango dot com. Two different chat rooms. You know, figure out which one you like. Incendiary Radio at gmail.com for all the haters and trolls. You know, quite an interesting day yesterday. I called into Rick Adams' show, and the topic that Rick and Art were talking about was basically Chicago, Jewish mob up there. You know, Rahm Emanuel, the dual citizen, saw fit to serve in the IDF, go help them out while Desert Storm was going on, you know, never would stoop to serve in the American military, of course. These dual citizens, probably 0.1% decide to join the American military, but you know, they'll go hang out and help out the IDF and genocide the Palestinians. Not a big problem. But so I made a call in, and I just want you guys to hear my call first. So, Mr. Producer, go ahead and play my call into Rick's show yesterday.
To our lineup here. Well, Dave dropped. Okay. Dave in Nevada. So let's go to Robert in Missouri, who hosts his own program here on Sunday nights. Come on up.
Hey, hey, Rick and Art. It's a great topic. Now listen to this. You guys need to watch this video by Stefan Molyneux. It's called The Fall of Chicago. There will be no recovery. And basically, if you watch this video, it's about 30 minutes long. He goes into the stats and the charts and everything about how bad the financial system in the city of Chicago with the pensions and everything else, and on top of that, the entire state of Illinois. So check that out. It's called The Fall of Chicago. There will be no recovery. And I think this has to be engineered in order to cover for basically the belly up situation of the city itself. It's gone. It's billions and billions in the hole. And so
with Chicago, yeah, there are a whole host of other cities and states that are following suit. This whole country is being bankrupted. You see, it's being overrun by the locust army.
Yeah. Now, check this out. Another great video about the entire, basically, underworld of Chicago and where Obama comes from, of course, is Dreams from My Real Father, by actually a Jewish guy who's a staunch anti-communist, but he goes into the whole Frank Marshall Davis connection of being his real father, who was a communist apparatchik in that city. And so Obama was tapped at a young age. And then it gets into the Ayers connection with Bill Ayers' father, a big executive in one of the, I think it was Emerson or one of the energy companies, and the whole Weatherman connection there. And then if you go on to Wayne Madsen's research about Bathhouse Berry and Rahm Emanuel, both belonging to the same gay bathhouse, it was called Man's Country up there in Chicago, in an area called Boys Town, where it's the gay area of the city, and they have phallic symbols that mark the entrance into Boys Town, and they're all painted in rainbow colors. So this is where Rahm and Obama were hanging out before Obama's being tapped to run against the fall guy, Alan Keyes, in the Senate. That Senator Jack Ryan was set up to fall so Obama could jump into his spot, and then bam, is his meteoric rise to the presidency. It's all a big joke. And this is the thing. Ezekiel Emanuel, Rahm's brother, is the architect of freaking Kevorkian Care, the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, so, yeah. Isn't that amazing?
This is what... Yeah, and then when you get into Emmanuel's pop being an ear goon, you know, back in 06, Bibi Netanyahu and all the ones that were still alive celebrated the 60th anniversary of bombing the King David Hotel, and they all had a big two-day party. This is the knuckleheads that we're dealing with that actually will throw a party to commemorate the 60th year, you know, there's that number six again, of doing a terrorist attack, killing all these civilians at the King David Hotel. They had a big party in Israel, and not one media outlet here in the United States picked that up. Isn't that amazing? So there's so many connections with that Chicago underworld. But Dreams for My Real Father by Joel Gilbert, whose follow-up movie was called There's No Place Like Utopia. If you watch those two movies, and that Dreams for My Real Father, he deconstructs that communist Jewish gangster underground of Chicago meticulously. And so there's so many connections there, but I just wanted to throw all that stuff out there. But that Fall of Chicago, There Will Be No Recovery video really lets you know they got to do something, because they can't even pay $100,000 lottery winner in the freaking state of Illinois, Rick. That's how bad the economy in Illinois is itself. So Chicago's
the
even worse.
The major cities,
so.
Think about it, right, Robert? Think about it now.
You can stop it right there.
The major cities.
Now, go ahead, Mr. Producer, find the troll. Find his, the next, increment into the program. And let me just expand for a second while you do that. You know, so Rick Adams and I and Art from Philly, who runs NoPlaceForCorruption.com, I was calling in because they were talking about Rahm Emanuel and they were talking about Chicago. Oh, and then I go on to Larry Silverstein after Rick made his comments. I talked about Larry Silverstein and the Blackstone Group actually owning the Willis Tower now, formerly the Sears Tower in Chicago. And so the entire, conversation was about that. And then this guy who's trolled me before, and the guy's like mentally ill, and you're going to hear the venom in this guy's voice. But I just wanted to put this out here, because this is the kind of crap, if you do radio, that you have to deal with, these mentally ill people that fixate in on you. So go ahead, Mr. Producer, play the troll. Go ahead.
Oh. So I appreciate that. Let's take Rick in Florida. Is that you, Rick in Florida? You're next.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment on Robert's calls. He calls all these shows and the Don Black show. And, you know, this is a guy who thinks Jesus is a Jew, and this is the guy we're getting all these truthful comments from. I mean,
well, why don't you just tell us what you think? Instead of attacking other callers, let's just get to your point. What do you have to say on this issue?
Why won't this guy debate anybody about where all the words he uses comes from? Oh, are we supposed to all be friends and cozy up to you? You know, that's how we're supposed to suss out the truth? By cozying up with everything that you say and never questioning anybody of what they say? I'm tired of hearing this guy Robert calling in all the time. I challenged him to a debate, and he balled out of it. Now, if we want the truth, we're going to debate. And if he's not going to debate and he's going to call every show, I'm going to call in and tell him what he is. That's it. Now, you can say whatever you want on the radio, but if you back out of a debate, you're a loser. That's the fact. If you want to use the word Jew and all these words all the time, every day, and you don't know what it means, then we're getting false information, and that's all there is to it.
All right. Thank you for the call. Okay.
All right. You can stop it there. So let's deconstruct this troll, okay? So first off, I give out a lot of good information, you know, on that call where we talked about everything about Emanuel and Obama and Frank Marshall Davis and the fall of Chicago and the belly up situation that city's in. You could see that Kyle Hunt and I talked about this before, when I had him on as a guest. I was like, look, if the situation's that bad in a city that size, it's ripe for a false flag hit. And I've talked about this with other hosts, and they were like, yeah, I kind of agree with that if you really get into the nuts and bolts of the financial situation. So the guy just attacks me right off the bat. This is a guy who thinks Jesus is a Jew, and this is the guy that we're getting all these truthful comments from. You know, this word Jew, it really throws people. You know, there's, how many different takes on this word there are across theological lines? These CI guys, they think it's here. Traditionalist Catholics, they're over here. Protestants here. Talmudists here, Muslims here. I mean, this is a joke. A guy he's never added anything to a conversation. All the times I've heard him troll on RBN, never added anything to a conversation. All he does is troll. Okay? And then Rick says, why don't you tell us what you think instead of attacking other callers? You know, Rick's a normal guy, and he leans into the CI circles. Big deal. I wasn't talking to Rick about theology. We were talking about Rahm Emanuel in the city of Chicago and Obama. And then this thing, why won't this guy debate anybody about where all the words he uses come from? Are you asking David Duke for a debate? Are you asking Kyle Hunt for a debate? Are you asking John Friend for a debate? Anybody that uses the word Jew, you want to debate them? While this mafia is destroying the planet, and you're worried about the word Jew, you're a sick person. You've got issues. You're mental. I could hear the venom in your voice. Are we all supposed to be friends and cozy up to you? Is that what we're supposed to, how we're supposed to suss out the truth? By cozying up with everything you say and never questioning? Blah, blah, blah. I challenged him to a debate and he bawled out of it. Here's what's funny. I never challenged you to a debate. You trolled me when I was on with Deanna Spingola and John Statmiller, the owner of this network. We were talking about rock and roll and people getting sucked into like evil things and having to make deals. And this guy trolls me then. I was like, well, why don't you call my program instead of trolling me while I'm on with the owner of the network? And then he took that as meaning I wanted to debate him. Well, first of all, who are you to think that I respect you enough or your views enough to even want to debate you? Who died and made you my linguistic programmer? Where you're telling me what words I can use on my own show or when I call into somebody else's show. Maybe you should worry about the words you use. Maybe you should try to add something to the conversation in radio shows rather than just calling up and trolling somebody. Because, you know, you calling other people losers, blah, 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 blah. I'm tired of hearing this guy Robert calling in all the time. Really? Are you the master of RBN? Are you the master of other programs that I call in? You're tired of it. Who died and made you God? I'd like to know. Do you do this to other callers or is it just me? What is it about me that gets you so your panties in a bunch, huh? What's your agenda? Challenged him to a debate and he bawled out of it. Now, if we want the truth, we're going to debate. And if he's not going to debate and he's going to call every show, I'm going to call in and tell him what he is. That's it. You need to look in the mirror. Don't worry about what I am. You need to worry about what you are. Can you add anything to a conversation other than trying to trash somebody else? Now, you can say whatever you want on the radio, but if you back out of a debate, you're a loser. I disrespect you enough to where I don't even want to debate a troll. Why would I want to debate a troll? Somebody that sounds mentally ill. That's counterproductive. If you want to use the word Jew in all these words all the time, every day, and you don't know what it means, then we're getting false information. Everybody out here in alternative media in this sector will use the word Jew. Are you emailing David Duke the same thing? He's got a book called Jewish Supremacism. It's rather retarded. Now, moving on, and I don't want to waste a whole lot more time on this, but Bill from Wisconsin, who I talk to on and off the air, he basically called in and says, well, I like Robert's stuff, and this Rick guy, I don't know what his problem is. And then Rick Adams is saying, you can hear it in Rick Adams' archive tomorrow, you know, whenever, at your leisure. But Rick Adams, like, Rick has a problem with everybody. Don't worry about it. So even Rick Adams basically sideswiped this guy as a troll. But then one of my regular callers, Wes in Idaho. Now he's Christian Identity. Now let me break down Wes real quick.
You know, Wes, who calls into these programs with the real high voice?
Yeah, Wes. He's a little surprised that Robert from Missouri even calls you Rick. I believe you, Rick Adams, and Bruce McCarthy, can I describe you as Christian Identity? I heard from Robert from Missouri to be very degrading and very intolerant of Christian Identity as I am. You know, I've never been degrading or intolerant to other people of other viewpoints. I have Kyle Hunt on this program. He's not even Christian. He's into more or less Norse and Celtic mythology, you know, the pantheon of those systems. And so him and I can still have a decent conversation. And so I think you're bearing false witness on me there. Maybe you took it that way. Robert is a Catholic, and myself, I don't find paying for indulgences or burning Christians at the stake when they have scriptures without permission from the Pope. You know, I've never burned anybody at the stake, and I've never paid a dime in an indulgence in my life. And so that's ridiculous. And I've never prayed to 200 saints that I have to pray for instead of Jesus Christ. That's more bogus garbage. Now some people are off into that. You know how many different sectors there are between Sedevacantist, traditional Catholicism, and modern Vatican II Catholicism. There's many striations, and most of you out there don't even know that. I don't think that's very Christian, but I'm not going to take issue with Robert if that's what he wants to be Catholic, because there have been some good Catholics. Yeah. Right. Yeah, go back to the 3rd century. Go back to the 4th century. Chrysostom. But once again, he's very intolerant of CI. Now, when I see people act, when I see, when you look into basically sectors like this, and you see the Fed penetration and the troll penetration. You just gotta call it out. We'll cover this on the other side. Incendiary Radio. You know, it just gets to me, all these Pharisees that call in behind people and troll. You know, I don't need to agree with somebody theologically to call their program, and I don't need somebody to agree with me theologically to have them on my program. But if somebody starts off with me from day one as a disrespectful, you know, like basically mentally ill creep. And then they expect me to capitulate and say, yeah, come on my program and let's have a debate. No, that's ridiculous because I disrespect that person right off the bat because I was disrespected first. And so that's how that works. And, people are just mentally ill out here in general. People twist Bible into so many different pretzel-shaped things out here that, I mean, look, you got these black Hebrew Israelites. They're up here in the East Coast real big. They dress like somebody out of an extra from a Conan the Barbarian flick, okay? You can watch their YouTube videos. They claim we're the real true tribe of Judah. And then the Dominicans are Reuben and the Jamaicans are this. And they got the whole 12 tribes thing plotted out. Then you got British Israelism. You got Israel identity. You got virulent forms of Christian identity. Everybody wants to be an Israelite. Okay. Have at it. Go be an Israelite. You're chosen. You're special. Now get on with your life. Okay, you're better than everybody else. You're the apple of God's eye. Okay? He just loves you more than anybody else. The rest of the world, they're crap. You're just the diamond in the rough. Many of you with that kind of attitude, you're really the turd in the punch bowl. You're chosen. You're special. Everybody wants to be chosen and special. La raza, yeah. For those inside the race, everything. For those outside, nothing. Brown pride, brown power. Yeah. Now I'm pro-white as the next person. I want to see white people flourish and have their own countries and the rest of it. But if I gotta boot out the Jewish supremacists and get my own country back, and then I gotta entertain these wackos over here that think they're the real supreme ones, that's gonna be real fun too. You gonna start stoning your children for disrespecting you? Huh? You gonna dash the children's heads off the rocks like the book of Isaiah says? You can't wait for that day, can you? There's a bunch of sick people in this world. And some of them happen to be white. Yeah. All those white people that buried all that nuclear waste up the road from me. Yeah. The military industrial complex. Real nice. Yeah. So, you know, this whole theological crap, you don't know what the word Jew means. Who says you know what it means? Look in the mirror. There's your problem. See you guys on the other side of the... Incendiary Radio. I had to do a little troll cleanup. I want to get into this Planned Parenthood thing. I got a couple articles pulled up. One of them's by Dr. K from NoDisInfo.com. The other one's from Jim Stone. But I've been seeing this. I've been listening to interviews. I listen to a lot of talk radio. And I just want to call this the paperclip deception. Okay? Now, everybody always talks about Operation Paperclip, the Nazis. They won. They all came here, and Wernher von Braun and Reinhard Gehlen and all these guys, you know, so the Nazis secretly, they won and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, well, everybody forgets about this, especially like your usual people that are sniffing out the Nazi boogeyman. The Federal Reserve. Well, it was established in 1913, okay? So you take 1945, you're talking 32 years later, we had already been in the clutches of the Zio Jewish banking cartel for 32 years, okay? The Warburgs, you know, everybody, the Jekyll Island cabal, you know, this Rothschild thing, J.P. Morgan, And so basically everybody's like, so they forget that America was already in the clutches of the Jewish bankers for 30 something years. And then some of these intelligentsia from the Third Reich were imported here. And I think this really ties in with and a lot of people just dropped the ball on this one, except a few out here and some of the more hardcore, I would say Protestant, let's just say Vatican watchers. This is this axis between basically the Jesuit order. You might as well call them the Jesuit order. Kosher Nostra banking and American intelligence community. All right. You know, you got Wild Bill Donovan, Knight of Malta, founder of basically forefather of the OSS, which later morphed into the CIA. So, you know, Catholic skullduggery, Vatican. Oh, and this is what kills me about Wes. He's basically, I'm probably one of the more vocal hosts on this entire network that exposes Vatican skullduggery. I don't hear hardly anybody else on the network even go there. And so for Wes to throw me under the bus as a Catholic that wants to burn people at the stake and take their Bibles, I think that's quite disingenuous of you, Wes. But anyway, so it really smacks of that axis between the Society of Jesus, which basically runs the town I live in, and the Jewish mob. And which I think basically, and I've elaborated on this before, I think that Ignatius de Loyola of Spain and this Marano connection. I've always had this feeling since I really started digging into this that implanted into the Vatican was this wing of Kosher Nostra. And so this is how you can see the transference of some of the brains from the Third Reich coming into the United States. It's from that axis right there. You know, the Jesuit Kosher Nostra Knight of Malta basically axis. When these organizations really started getting joined at the hip, there was many Catholic thinkers and authors that warned against this. And this is what's so fascinating, and so few people out here realize they haven't read Dennis Fahey and some of these other guys that warned against basically the elders of Zion joining themselves at the hip with the Vatican, and the closer they got, the worse it would be for the world. So I just wanted to cover this, what I call like kind of this, like this paperclip deception that somehow, you know, the Nazis came here and took over, you know, and you know, you get into the Bush/Scherf family and you get these connections running around, but you got to realize who sits at the top of this pyramid, and it's basically, you know, the synagogue. And so I just wanted to throw that out there. Now let's get into this. NoDisinfo.com, Colorado Springs Planned Parenthood shooting is a gun control hoax. Well, I think it's even bigger. I think it's also to try to gin up some sympathy for the baby killing industry and the organ harvesting industry, which flourishes through the baby killing. Planned Parenthood. You know, we all know that the, let's just say the, standing in the public's eye of Planned Parenthood has fell significantly over the last number of months with the release of all these videos, where these people are sitting pounding back glasses of wine and eating salad and laughing about selling baby parts to people and, you know, on the cheap and, you know, wanting to drive a Lamborghini and all the weird crap that these devils that work in these clinics, you know, it's just this coarseness. You know, I mean, think about it. It's like working in a slaughterhouse. You know, these people become numb to it. But this is a slaughterhouse of human beings. And so, and Dr. K talks about the lack of emotion on people's faces, you know, and I'm like, well, hell, if I worked in a freaking abortion clinic where they kill babies all day long, I'd probably have a lack of emotion too if just a couple of people got shot. If you're looking at arms and legs and everything else pulled apart and babies burned with saline and their backs of their brainstem pulled out and all the rest of the weird crap they do to these poor children, I mean, hell, I'd probably become pretty numb too. So here's Jim Stone, and I got a couple things off his site I wanted to read because he's quite an interesting person to keep up on. Abortion clinic shootout hoax. There was another abortion clinic shooting hoax in Colorado. Several things don't wash at all. First of all, if a guy went into an abortion clinic to shoot it up, there would be a lot more than three dead with two unnamed. Well, that's debatable. Supposedly this guy went in, held everyone hostage, and only shot outside the clinic from a window. And I saw the pictures of this guy, and if he doesn't look like a candidate for some MK Naomi, I don't know who is. So check out the pictures of the guy that they caught. And let me go on and on, and I'll elaborate. But so far, there's one police officer confirmed dead, and the two other dead will be, quote-unquote, named later. After the local abortion communist community decides who they want taken out and sends someone into their homes to shoot them tonight under the disguise of this stupid fake story. And now I just figured it out. We'll say it like it is, virtually assured. Canned Parenthood hired this guy to go in and start shooting out a window. Well, I don't know if I agree with that. This, you know, I've been listening to some interviews by some of these, let's just say people in the scientific kind of, let's just say technical DARPA world that I've heard in the last few weeks. And, you know, this stuff we're seeing on the universities and, this behavior by people, this weird kind of Orwellian, Huxleyan behavior of just this completely foreign political correctness, safe spaces, all this weird crap. There are some people that I've heard lately on various talk programs talk about basically DARPA experimenting on these people in universities with ELF, extremely low frequencies, and other things. It's so creepy and it's just so out there, but to not take that in and at least toss it about in your mind and say this is possible, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. I think that what the experiments going on right now on the public, this public that we call Americans, I think it is so off the charts, and especially in these indoctrination establishments, these poor kids in the schools where they've got the Wi-Fi cranked up And then on these college, university campuses, who knows what the hell, and all these science labs. I'm just saying, keep it in mind, because I think the possibility and the easiness right now of possibly winding people up to do things, we have to look at that angle. And if we don't, you know, everybody wants to look at the SSRI angle. Oh, the psych meds. But is there another catalyst here that a lot of people don't want to address because it's just they don't want to go there and sound crazy to their neighbors and friends and relatives? And that's that whole, what is there on the frequency level, the electronic frequency level, that could actually tie in possibly with a psych med, or even if somebody's not on a med? What about that angle? I think we really have to keep that in mind as well. Back to the article. They wanted deaths, but not in the clinic. This is the only conceivable way he would go in and start shooting from a window. Since Canned Parenthood is Murder Incorporated, they cared not who the gunman, no doubt a dual citizen Israeli. Now, I'm not. This is Jim Stone talking, and this isn't me. Shot outside the clinic. He will be carted off to Israel and arrive back in the U.S. with a totally new identity, none the worse for wear. Now, I mean, I don't know. It's interesting to read, but they could just throw this guy down a hole somewhere. Look at James Holmes from this Aurora thing. You know, look at Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber. Look at a bunch of these high profile, weird kind of lone nut kind of deals. Where's Dylan Stormroof right now? Okay, from the Charleston PSYOP. We haven't heard anything. You see, where's Terry Nichols? Okay, Timothy McVeigh's boy. They put these people down black holes in the federal and penitentiary systems, and who knows what the hell happens to them. That's all I'm going to say. So the whole thing about Israeli stuff, it's interesting to read, but you know, let's go back to the article. Meanwhile, Obama gets his gun ban on extremely dubious grounds. Well, on Drudge today, there was some crap on Yahoo News where Obama's talking smack about guns again. And then they get the added little bonus of it being at Planned Parenthood, see, which was under such fire. States were wanting to defund it. Some of them actually, like Kansas, I believe, did move to defund it. And so Planned Parenthood was on the ropes. And so, hey, what better way, send a gunman in, do some shooting around the clinic, shoot a cop, you see? Oh, now you got it. Now you've got it in the minds of the sheeple that the guy, he hated abortion and he shot a cop. You see the connection that's made there, this neuro-linguistic, this imagery, this symbology, the connection, cop, abortion clinic, shot at the same time. You see, they're smart, but they're stupid. I mean, they're doing so many of these operations that a significant portion of people are starting to get it, but I just don't think enough that it's going to make them back off. I think they're putting the pedal to the metal. The Corvette's in sixth gear. You're approaching 175 miles an hour, and this is where we're at. And he's talking about the gun ban on extremely dubious grounds. And if the American people permit it, they are all accessories to murder. Because in my opinion, everyone at Canned Parenthood should get life in prison, if not executed anyway. To stand on the side of a gun ban in this scenario makes, in my opinion, anyone who does accessories to murder. And that's precisely what a bunch of Luciferian communists would want, to get as many people damn to hell as possible on how they side to this. And so you can find more. It's a quite a long article, and I don't want to spend too much time on it. I wanted to read this, and this is an email in Turkey. You know, we've been seeing Turkey really just coming up in the news with the connections to ISIS and the oil and Erdogan's kid, Bilal, being in charge of the oil, coming, being plundered from Syria and Iraq. And yeah, I'm going to get into some Turkey stuff too, but, here's the email. Jim, I live in Turkey. to the head of the bar attorney at one of the largest Kurdish regions was assassinated yesterday. I'm sure many of you have seen this. Now all parts of civil society, from lawyers to journalists, and we've seen the journalists arrested, especially ones that are blowing the whistle on this ISIS, Turkish pipeline, and then the Webster Tarpley, and all these people are covering this. Anybody with a Twitter account are under attack from the state and its apparatus. So he calls it Paras. No longer just faced with jail, but actually being gunned down on the street. The homes of Alevis, 15 to 20% of the populace, Turkey's heterodox Muslim grouping, are being exed in preparation for the kind of attacks which occurred 20 years ago. When you consider that Kurds are another some 20% of the ethnic religious potential for chaos between minorities, and the Sunni whack jobs holding power is enormous. So another Middle Eastern country racked by civil war, almost certain now. And then I'm reading all these, and I'm sure you are as well, these reports that Putin's going to pound Turkey. And so we got to keep our eyes open. What Erdogan must first do, though, is finally gain total control over the army, which is traditionally a force which removes civilian governments when they stray too far in one direction or the other. He cannot move to complete his plans to bring all non-Sunni, non-Turk citizens under direct attack until he humbles the armed forces for good. And he can't wait around to do it, because the bombing of ISIS is drying up his supply of cash super fast. And that's by the Russians, of course. The economy is in crash and burn mode. And if he cannot pay his thugs and the loyalist supporters, he and his government will join it fast. You know, what's interesting is to see, I want to see who France and I want to see who Germany and all these people fighting so-called this war on ISIS, I want to see who they're really targeting. I have a bad feeling it's Assad's forces. See you guys on the other side of the break. Incendiary Radio. I hope you're liking it. All right, folks, we're back. Short segment till the top of the hour. I want to plug this. PK22, PEEKAY 22. That's a YouTube channel. Couple videos, and I sent this one around today to a lot of the people that I'm in contact with, and they were like, "Wow!" It's called "Can You Believe Your Government Supports This?" Can you believe your government supports this? And it's about basically the Israelis, and the way they treat the Gazans. And it just shows so many dead children, so many bombings. It shows snipers killing people right there on film. I mean, it's pretty hardcore. So I gotta warn you. PK22, PEEKAY22, can you believe your government supports this? Really goes off on Netanyahu. He's sitting there. You gotta watch the video. But I just wanted to throw this one out there. The cafe, in Paris, you know, one of the sites where this, false flag, this little psyop, whatever you want to call it, Eagles of Death Metal, incident happened. And, they're, if you go on Russian Vid's channel, he really breaks down these Eagles of Death Metal guys and their little interview with Vice. And he breaks it down. These guys are some serious clowns. But the name of the cafe, Casa Nostra, I just found that fascinating. And a lot of people have done, you know, PK, Paris Casa Nostra Cafe attack exposed as a staged hoax, complete breakdown. But I just found the name Casa Nostra. I found that quite interesting. So can you believe your government supports this? You got to watch that one. Now my boy Pat sent me this one, and it's about a minute long. And it's Michael Morell, former deputy CIA director. This is the new speak. This is the weirdness coming out of our government, apparatchiks. Mr. Producer, play clip one. It's about a minute.
the funding that they have, attack the ability to...
It's with Charlie Rose, by the way. Go ahead, Mr. Producer.
Which is your original question.
Right.
Which
so
it would be doing now.
So this is one of the collateral damage questions, right? So prior to Paris, there seemed to be a judgment, right? I don't sit in the sit room anymore, but there seemed to have been a judgment that, look, we don't want to destroy these oil tankers because that's infrastructure that's going to be necessary to support the people when ISIS isn't there anymore. And it's going to create environmental damage. And we didn't go after oil wells, actually hitting oil wells that ISIS controls because we didn't want to do environmental damage and we didn't want to destroy that infrastructure, right?
So we hit oil on trucks.
So now we're hitting oil on trucks, right? And maybe you get to the point where you say we have to also hit oil wells. So those are the kind of tough decisions you have to make. What is...
Yeah. So they're really worried about environmental damage in the Middle East, dropping depleted uranium all over the place, burning the oil wells in the first Gulf War. That was when I was in the military. We'll cover this on the other side, though. But this is the mental illness and just buffoonery that comes out of the mouths of people in our intelligence community. See you guys on the other side. Radio@gmail.com. You can join the troll brigade and troll me. I forgot to cover this one. Drone pilots have bank accounts and credit cards frozen by the feds for exposing U.S. murder. Oh, let me get back to the Michael Morrell, former deputy CIA director. So now in 2015, you clowns are worried about environmental damage. And then you're worried about having oil for the people that are left when ISIS disappears. So this mercenary army that you and your little buddies in the occupied Sunni world built, along with the Jewish thugs in Israel. Now you're talking about taking ISIS out of the way. And I think he's just using ISIS as a code word for Assad. I think they're using doublespeak here. They want Assad out of the way. Okay? This is the objective. And so many people in the alternative right are getting caught up into this this Islam thing to where it's the top of the heap that Europeans and people in the Western world need to worry about. Oh my God, Islam! Yeah. These people are simpletons. They're not doing their heavy research. They're not doing the heavy lifting required to analyze the macro vision that you have to see the problem. Now, I would be disingenuous to tell you that there is not a strain, and it's probably quite a decent sized strain of thinkers in the Muslim world. Let's just call them Islamic supremacists. And basically any honest Muslim will tell you that, yeah, there's a whole boatload of these guys that believe that Islam is going to spread across the entire planet. the Al-Azhar scholars in Egypt, the Wahhabis in Saudi Arabia, the Takfiris, the Salafists in Egypt. There's a whole gang of these people that believe that it is the destiny for mankind that Islam encircles and takes in the entire globe, that the entire globe one day will be Islamic. Okay. For me to sit here as a person of European extraction and try to deny that makes me a fool. Okay. But I think that there's a sizable contingent, let's just call them secular people that were raised under Islam, that they really don't care one way or the other whether Islam encircles the earth or not. I think secretly there's a whole bunch of people that were raised by Muslim parents, especially young people, that don't want to see Islam basically spread any further than where it is now, or would like to see it shrink, especially the loony forms like the Wahhabi, Takfiri, Salafi types. Okay? And so it's a big and wide open subject, but for me to sit here and say that there's not such a thing as Islamic supremacism, when I sit here and harp on Jewish supremacism quite a chunk of the time, that would make me disingenuous. So I got to get that out of the way. There are a ton of Islamic supremacists out here, and they do have this eschatological vision in their own theological construct that says Islam will cover the world. Like I said, though, I think especially secular Muslims, and especially, like, you know, young people and girls that don't want to wear the hijab or the burqa, they're not too interested in seeing that happen. And so let's just call it like it is. But So Michael Morell, the former deputy CIA director, he's trying to talk about the administration gives a rat's ass about the environment in the Middle East, which I think is just laughable when you look at all the depleted uranium that we've pounded the Middle East with. And the Israelis have used this crap. It got dropped onto the Serbs. You know, I mean, this is a bad deal. And so depleted uranium, all the weird cancers that the poor Iraqi civilian population are dealing with, especially around cities like Fallujah and so forth, it's really disgusting. And, you know, Major Doug Rocky and some of these other folks that are really in those DU circles, I mean, it's a horror story, you know, on top of Fukushima, on top of the Westlake landfill that's right up the road from me. I mean, this radioactive planet, or plane, whatever you want to call it, it's a son of a gun. So this is just the idiocy that these people in government think that most of us are operating this level that we're operating on, to say that you care about the environment and then you want the oil to be there for the people that are left over when ISIS is removed. Yeah, when you guys put ISIS there, I mean, it's just the Orwellian doublespeak is in the stratosphere right now. Let's go to this drone pilots thing. And this really gets into the Israelization of American military mindsets. Okay. So you got these four basically whistleblowers. They were flying drones for the Air Force. Michael Haas, Brandon Bryant, Chian Westmoreland, and Stephen Lewis. Okay. So they were drone operators. Gone public with detailed accounts of the widespread corruption and institutionalized indifference to civilian casualties that characterize the program. And, you know, I'll be honest. You know, when I was on my second deployment, when I was in the military, I was in the Marine Corps, and I happened to be on a Navy ship, and we were overseas on what they call a WESPAC. All right. Going across the Pacific Ocean, all the way from San Diego, all the way around, all the way up through the Straits of Hormuz into the Persian Gulf. You hang out up there for a while. Our ship had to go into dry dock. I had to sit in the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, for about a month. And then you sail back, making stops at various places along the way. the thing is, I'm not going to lie. We had some pilots that came in just and basically to entertain the troops, and they used to show us footage from their planes of them pounding, Iraqi targets from Desert Storm. And, you know, as a young, what is that, about 20, 21 year old, we all thought that was real cool, man. You watch these people running away from a big warehouse type building, and then the whole screen just gets boom, all dead people. They're all fizzled. You know, we all thought that was real cool. And then looking back on it now, you know, you're like, wow. We're sitting here doing this for the neoconservative PNAC dual citizen thugs that got us into this whole mess in the first place. It's a real eye opener once you open your mind to the big picture and you see that America's nothing but a proxy army of the basically, you know, Jewish supremacist, cabal that runs the planet. So they wrote open letters. You know, from the whistleblowers to the president, Ash Carter, the nice neocon defense secretary, and good old John Brennan, Jesuit trained John Brennan, fake or real convert to Sunni Islam while he was station chief in Saudi Arabia. Who knows? There are reports of that. Now here's their letter. We join the Air Force to protect American lives and to protect our Constitution. We came to the realization that the innocent civilians we were killing only fueled the feelings of hatred that ignited terrorism and groups like ISIS. Well, see, they're still under mind control. They don't even realize that while their left hand was doing this, the right hand, the other guys in their own government were creating ISIS. While also serving as a fundamental recruiting tool similar to Guantanamo Bay. Yeah, well, Guantanamo Bay, from my research, is that they're actually doing catch and release. You know what they're doing? They're catching these guys, bringing them to Gitmo, and then they're MK Ultraing and these guys and sending them back out onto the battlefield as windups for us. So think about that. Creating Manchurians. Right in Gitmo, Muslim Manchurians go out there and do whatever they, you know, control them to do. This is a whole nother area that's just, it's off the charts, and a lot of people just can't, they're unwilling to take that in, that Gitmo's actually, there's bases within bases. I knew a Navy Master Chief that still kind of a younger guy, right around my age, but he'd been in active duty and he's reserve. But this guy talked about how they had deep bases inside Gitmo where like your spec ops, your black bag boy CIA were operating, doing all kinds of weird crap to these people. And so, you know, it's interesting. This administration and its predecessors have built a drone program that is one of the most devastating driving forces for terrorism and destabilization around the world. Elsewhere, the former drone operators have described, now listen to this, how their colleagues dismiss children as fun-sized terrorists, quote-unquote, and compared killing them to, quote-unquote, cutting the grass before it grows too long. Now, who does that sound like? That sounds like the Israelis, the IDF. You know, and that one video I told you guys, your government supports this or whatever it was from PK-22 or whatever. It shows pictures of those IDF sniper t-shirts that these guys proudly wear where there's a pregnant Arab woman in the sights of the sniper rifle. It says one shot, two kills. Now, if that doesn't disgust you, as a military man, if you're a military man, or a non-military person, to actually wear that, one shot, two kills, a pregnant Palestinian Arab woman, and she's wearing a hijab or, you know, kind of the long dress, but you could tell her belly's full, one shot, two kills. Real nice, IDF. You guys are really, you know, and when you watch that video, man, you're gonna flip because it shows these guys basically like congratulating each other and they're all laid up there in prone position sniping people and they think it's cool. And so fund-sized terrorists and quote-unquote cutting the grass before it grows too long. And see, this is that coldness. This is that this happens when people you're sitting in an air-conditioned military base somewhere in freaking Nevada or, you know, Nebraska somewhere, and you're sitting in your flight suit in a room with a joystick. You're killing people halfway around the world, and you're making comments like fund-sized terrorists and cutting the grass before it grows too long. You know, and then these people, you know, they do it for so long, and some of them actually get PTSD. I think the spiritual side of the house starts to get, let's just say, off balance, knowing deep down somewhere, and then that subconscious of theirs, that psyche, that spiritual realm, that they are actually killing people. Children who live in countries targeted by the drone program are in a state of constant terror, just like those people in Gaza. My gosh. There are 15-year-olds growing up who have not lived a day without drones overhead, but you also have expats who are watching what's going on in their home countries and seeing regularly the violations that are happening there, and that is something that could radicalize them. Yeah, and that's the thing. That's what they want. They want more people to do crazy stuff. That way they can keep the police state rolled out. They can keep the DHS funding at an all-time high. They can keep the FBI counterterrorism getting their big, big allocation of resources when the budget comes up. You see, they like that stuff. Now, let's see, it's 11:14. Let's play clip two, Mr. Producer. It's about Hillary.
If democracy's awarded to the highest bidder, then Hillary's got it made. She's got all the lines Jewish money can buy. She puts Israel first, pushes perversion to undermine Christian morality, sings the Jewish jingle, Assad must go, and threatens war with Russia. That's why her backers read like a guest list to a bar mitzvah. Sabin, Soros, Spielberg, Sussman, to name a few. Don't be fooled, Sheldon Adelson's cashing in on Hillary too. It's a two-party system with one Jewish script, and Hillary plays her part.
I know well that the same forces that threaten Israel threaten the United States. And to the people of Israel, let me say, you'll never have to question whether we're with you. The United States will always be with you.
Through thick and thin. I mean through theft and mass murder. Time for D.C. to stop being the dog that barks for Israel. And what better way to please the Jews than to push perversion? For with all the major Jewish organizations sponsoring sodomy, Hillary's their chief celebrant.
It's been quite a year, hasn't it? It felt like all of America was dancing in the streets this June.
More like peeing in their pants.
I'm running for president to stand up for the fundamental rights of LGBT Americans.
How about standing up for the traditional family, the core of a strong nation, not weaken it by promoting deviant sex? And when she sings that Jewish jingle, Assad must go, she's auditioning to be their first shiksa in the White House.
Russia and Iran have to face the fact that continuing to prop up a vicious dictator will not bring stability. There is no alternative to a political transition that allows Syrians to end Assad's rule.
What if Syrians don't want Assad to go? Are you going to bomb them for voting in the wrong president? Fact is, they voted for Assad by a landslide in 2014. But if democracy doesn't fit the Jews' agenda, then regime change fits just fine, even if it means war with Russia.
We should also work with the coalition and the neighbors to impose no-fly zones that will stop Assad from slaughtering civilians and the opposition from the air.
You silly gal. Russian bombers are lawfully flying all over Syria's skies right up to Turkey's borders. And you want a no-fly zone? Then put your own arse in the cockpit and fire the first shot. Then we'll know who's to blame when World War III breaks out with Russia. Hillary's looking like a shoe-in. She gets the best press and the best speaking slots. You'll never see Trump at CFR. Or after all, elections 2016 are for Jews only.
All right, so that was Brother Nathaniel again. He's been putting out some really heavy-hitting, just concise videos where, I mean, gosh. Do you hear the doublespeak coming out of Hillary about Assad being this, oh, my God, this vicious dictator? when the Takfiri mob is trying to overthrow him to get to the Iranians, this Wahhabi Takfiri mob, they want to take out this basically a Western trained doctor, the oldest Christian communities in the world in Syria, and they're sending the loons after him. This is disgusting. So I want to get to this article. I know the break's coming up. It's one of the latest ones of Tex Mars. It's called Kosher Politics. We'll cover it on the other side. Incendiary Radio. See you guys. Incendiary Radio, short segment, long segment after the bottom of the hour. This is Tex Mars, Power of Prophecy. Oh, by the way, Tex likes using the word Jews and Jewish. Is he bad? You going to troll him? America's presidential election masterminded by a handful of Jewish mega billionaires. Oh, he used the word Jewish. Oh, my gosh. This is from Nicholas Goldberg, the LA Times, April 7th, 2006. The claim that conniving Jews are secretly running the country is an old and repugnant canard. That's quite funny. So here's the article, Kosher Politics. Ann Coulter, the noted writer of best-selling political books, was disgusted viewing a recent presidential debate, asked to comment on what would America be like if they were elected president. Four of the 10 candidates responded by talking not about America but about Israel. Coulter immediately tweeted asking why the politicians were pandering to Israel. She then sent this added comment. How many effing Jews do these people think there are in the United States? Oh boy, Miss Coulter did a bad thing. Immediately she was bombarded by angry tweets demeaning her as an anti-Semite and claiming she is a racist and bigot. In the following weeks, Coulter suffered scathing comments from Jewish media in major newspapers and magazines. One article's headline trumpeted, Ann Coulter's career is officially over. Ann Coulter found out that it's not the votes the Jews have. It's their clout. It does indeed to pay to pander to Israel. And swift consequences are heaped on those who do not recognize this important fact of political life. But don't, hey, you're not allowed to say Jew because you don't know what it means. See? Troll. All votes are not equal. The average dumbed-down American believes that all voters are equal. All have the same opportunity to affect an election. In fact, our presidents are chosen by a small clique of wealthy and influential money men, all of whom are Jews. That is why the Chicago Tribune in 2007 called Barack Obama the Jewish president. The Tribune, incidentally, is owned by a rich Jewish insider, Sam Zell. He also owns the Los Angeles Times newspaper. Doubt this cold, hard fact of Jewish rule. okay? Then let's examine recent presidential campaigns and see just who rules whom. Sheldon Adelson, Mr. Moneybag. In the 2012 election, Adelson, Las Vegas casino mogul, gave generously to preferred candidates. He's back again in 2015, according to news reports. The grizzled Israel Firster, who runs the Likud party over there in Israel, by the way, has over $100 million to spend, but recipients must prove their absolute allegiance to Israel. Sheldon Adelson conducted a gala event in Nevada this past July for five of the presidential wannabes. Each spoke of their warm friendship with money man Adelson, who paid all their expenses to come to the shindig. In September, Adelson sat at a front table with two of his Republican proteges, Senator Ted Cruz, wife, VP Goldman Sachs, by the way, CFR, and Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey. The occasion was a Champions of Israel dinner in New York City, and the two invitees were honored to sit with the mega billionaire. Senator Ted Cruz meets privately with 10 New York Jews. The next day, Senator Cruz went over to the plush Manhattan apartment of two Jewish billionaires, Ian Reisner and Mati Weiderpass. There he schmoozed with 10 of the richest men in the USA, all of whom were Jews. Cruz spoke of his undying love for Israel and told the billionaires, most of whom are also homosexual, that he wouldn't love his daughters any less if they turned out to be gay. Nice. Just like Dick Cheney's, huh? Governor Huckabee flies to Israel for donations. Fast forward a couple of months and we find former Governor Mike Huckabee flying over to Israel. We met with Jewish billionaires and begged them for money for his campaign. Huckabee says he travels at least once per year to Israel, where he puts on his skull cap and prays at the Wailing Wall, then goes over to the fancy condos to the rich. Senator Marco Rubio, biggest kiss up of all. The biggest kiss up of all, though, appears to be Senator Marco Rubio, the Red Mark. Rubio got into office after financial donors, all Jews, came up with big, big contributions. Only in office 5 years, Rubio has slavishly done their bidding. He stealthily supports the gay agenda, voted for Planned Parenthood and big budgets, and pushed for war with Syria and Iran. Best of all, from the Jewish standpoint, Rubio became one of the Gang of Eight, Democrat and Republican senators who backed Obama's open borders immigration policies. See you on the other side, Cindiary Radio. Nights, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Back to Tex Mars. Kosher politics. So let's finish Rubio. Supported by one of the wealthiest Jews in America, Florida's Paul Singer, a Wall Street investor. Singer is a big promoter of same-sex marriage. He got Senator Rubio to introduce several key bills in the Senate that expanded visas for foreigners in the high-tech industry. He likes Rubio's open immigration ideas and sees him as continuing the establishment of the Rhino agenda. Yeah, of course, I mean, Rubio's Cuban, folks. He doesn't care about whether this country stays majority white or not. He'd rather not see it. It's ridiculous. The other candidates, well, Ben Carson seems to be getting his share of Jewish money. The doctor who supported Bill Clinton as president before he switched to the Republican Party took an all-expenses-paid trip to Israel last December. He impressed the Jews, claiming that the Palestinians were aggressors and should be relocated en masse to Egypt. He called Netanyahu a great leader and said, I'm in awe of Israel. Yeah, man, you'd have a lot of work over there after they level all those apartments in Gaza and all them dead babies. Heck, maybe you could, you know, sew some of them up, Carson. Grab some of their brains that are splattered all over the place. Freak. Ben Carson, by the way, thinks the pyramids were built by Joseph, the biblical patriarch, to store grain. He stands by that theory. Brilliant. Senator Rand Paul. He admits that he talks with the Jewish lobbyists every single day. He once gave a speech on the Senate floor in which he favorably mentioned Israel 16 times. Rand Paul's obviously not like his dad, Ron. Carly Fiorina is in the tank for the Jews. In one of the debates, she said the first thing she would do if she were elected would be to phone her buddy, Bibi, in Israel and tell him she's got his back. Jeb Bush, he had millions of dollars he got from his Jewish cronies. Now they've all gone over to his opponents, the Jewish bigwigs like winners, not quote-unquote low-energy losers. The same goes for Governor Kasich of Ohio. Hillary Clinton, a Jewish favorite. And I've played the video by Brother Nathaniel. She will do or say whatever her Jewish bosses dictate. In 2014, billionaire Chaim Saban, a pal of Sheldon Adelson, told Bloomberg that he would contribute as much as needed to elect Hillary in 2016. Super rich, he declares proudly he will give his money to Hillary because she will strengthen the U.S.-Israel partnership. I'm a one-issue guy, says Saban, and my issue is Israel. Coke. An icon ready with pocketbooks. The billionaire Koch brothers, oil men from New York and Kansas, are in the game too. They say their money will go only to a pro-Israel candidate. And Jewish Wall Street king Carl Icahn recently set up a $150 million super PAC. Icahn is a big supporter of real estate mogul Donald Trump. Jewish money talks, kosher politicians listen. According to the New York Times, Jewish billionaires are instrumental in giving money for both the Republicans and Democrats. So let's move on. You know, it's a good article. I wanted to get into this. John Friend put this one out tonight. Jews caught operating white sex slavery ring in Israel. A Jewish-run sex slavery ring was recently uncovered and exposed in Israel. The Times of Israel reported this morning the sex slaves were lured from Russia and the Ukraine. Oh, the old home of the Khazars, the Ukraine, ancient Khazaria, where they want to set up their little second operating post. Interesting, isn't it? Lured from Russia and the Ukraine and later smuggled into Israel to work as prostitutes for their Jewish masters. Police bust women trafficking, prostitution ring in TA. A months-long undercover police investigation has uncovered a woman trafficking and prostitution network in Tel Aviv and Ramat Gan. The investigation, reported Sunday by Israel Radio, was conducted under the auspices of the Tel Aviv police and resulted in the arrest of two men suspected of running the trafficking ring. Somehow these guys must have gotten some bad graces or didn't pay their protection money or something. Because these brothels are all over the place, as far as my research shows, and in Jerusalem as well. Additional arrests are expected, the Hebrew language Walla news site reported. The suspected ringleader, Leonid Strimer, is a 35-year-old resident of the Tel Aviv suburb of Bat Yam. These Jews are not only openly running your government, media, banking system, and academia for their tribe's exclusive ethnic benefit, they are also deceiving and kidnapping your women in order to transport them to Israel to sexually service their fellow Jews. These poor Russian and Ukrainian women, who are likely extremely beautiful and very talented, are being systematically abused and degraded by these Jewish perverts and sexual deviants. What an outrage. It's time to man up, guys. We need to deal with the problem sooner rather than later. So that's John Friend's latest. He sent me that one. Wanted to get into this one. This Dr. James Tracy and then Dr. Jim Fetzer posted this one. This is kind of interesting. Removed Infowars.com article about the Sandy Hook book ban has been found. Now check this out. While it's one thing for Amazon.com to ban Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, which was just released, folks, which proves that the events in Newtown on 14 December 2012 were an elaborate hoax for which there was a rehearsal the day before, it is another for Infowars.com, Alex Jones's website, based on the premises that we are engaged in an information war for your mind, to pull an article that reports on a stellar instance of precisely that taking place. The hypocrisy of disappearing such an obvious example that proves the case for Infowars.com has stunned and astonished me. That's Dr. Fetzer. So he's taking the gloves off with Infowars. And, you know, I've been pretty tough on the organization for let's just say missing all these latest false flags, hoaxes, psyops, and then running a cover.
Seas are rising.
Basically,
storms
the
are getting
Saudis
fiercer.
Did
farmland
9/11
is getting
angle where Jones has been just fixated in the last, I would say, number of months up to about a year, where he just started really saying Saudi Arabia numerous times in a constant mantra. Let's see here. Infowars.com has published about Sandy Hook before. It has published massive mega cover-up. Retired FBI agent investigates Sandy Hook. Retired Navy SEAL says Sandy Hook doesn't add up. Let's see here. And I'm going to get past some of the, let's see. Okay. So what he's saying basically had to be taken down was an image credit on the Infowars website that the Connecticut State Police had given, and that's in this book. Okay, so basically, it must have caused panic among the participants, since here is one of the web's major sites offering conclusive proof that the Connecticut State Police were on the crime scene before the crime had been committed, and were therefore participants in perpetrating an elaborate hoax on the American public that had to be taken down. What could be more telling than that they have taken the book down but cannot explain the reasons for suppressing it, which of course they have had in advance of taking it down. Just how dumb are we all supposed to be? And this is Jim Fetzer. And so basically he's saying it was already starting to get a bunch of 5-star reviews. And this is Fetzer saying this. This forces me to conclude that Alex Jones is an internet eunuch who doesn't have the balls to stand up against the powers that be when real issues are on the line. Wow. Called him a eunuch with no balls. That's Fetzer. Crazy. He could prove that I am wrong by restoring the article, but by taking the original down, he has already proven that I am right. This may come as a shock, but those of us who have followed him closely in the past have noticed that he does not mention Israeli complicity in 9/11, in spite of a mass of evidence, and that he has made no effort to bring me on to discuss the banning of Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. And so it's quite interesting. And so Fetzer getting in on the action of throwing Jones under the bus. Let's see here. Now, this is from back in 2011. This is from October 25th, 2011, strategicculture.org. Now, I got this off of Henry Mackow's site. It was a link, and he has a condensed version of the article. But this is kind of interesting because we've been seeing this turkey just totally bubble up to the surface, the Russian jet thing, and then the oil coming out of Iraq and Syria, going through Erdogan's son, this whole black market of oil going on, of this stolen oil from the Syrians and the Iraqis going through Turkey. Of course, all the jihadi fighters coming in through Turkey. And so I ran across this and I was like, you know what? This needs to come out again. This is called The Donma, The Middle East's Most Whispered Secret, Part 1. There's a historical 800-pound gorilla lurking in the background of almost every serious military and diplomatic incident involving Israel, Turkey, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Greece, Armenia, the Kurds, the Assyrians, and some other players in the Middle East and Southeastern Europe. It is a factor that is generally only whispered about at diplomatic receptions, news conferences, and think tank sessions due to the explosiveness and controversial nature of this subject. And it is the secretiveness attached to the subject that has been the reason for so much misunderstanding about the current breakdown in relations between Israel and Turkey, a growing warming of relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia, and increasing enmity between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Although known to historians and religious experts, the centuries-old political and economic influence of a group known in Turkish as the Donma is only beginning to cross the lips of Turks, Arabs, and Israelis who have been reluctant to discuss the presence in Turkey and elsewhere of a sect of Turks descended from a group of Sephardic Jews who were expelled from Spain during the Spanish Inquisition in the 16th and 17th centuries. These Jewish refugees from Spain were welcome to settle in the Ottoman Empire, and over the years they converted to a mystical sect of Islam that eventually mixed Jewish Kabbalah and Islamic Sufi semi-mystical beliefs into a sect that eventually championed secularism in post-Ottoman Turkey. It is interesting that Donma not only refers to the Jewish untrustworthy converts to Islam in Turkey, but it is also a derogatory Turkish word for a transvestite or someone who is claiming to be someone they are not. That's fascinating. The Donma sect of Judaism was founded in the 17th century, and here he comes again, by Rabbi Sabbatai Zevi, the founder of the Sabbateans. It's fascinating, isn't it? A Kabbalist who believed he was the Messiah but was forced to convert to Islam by Sultan Mehmet IV, the Ottoman ruler. Many of the rabbi's followers, known as Sabbateans, but also crypto-Jews, publicly proclaimed their Islamic faith but secretly practiced their hybrid form of Judaism, which was unrecognized by mainstream Jewish rabbinical authorities. Because it was against their beliefs to marry outside their sect, the Donma created a rather secretive sub-societal clan. That's so fascinating when you get into this crypto-Jew thing with the Sabbateans going into Islam, right? Well, we had the same thing happen with Catholicism, with what they call the Marranos, the conversos in Spain. So some of them decided to go ahead and go into Catholicism. Some of them went into the Ottoman Empire and did it, what you would call a questionable conversion into Islam. And you see, this, like I've said numerous times on my show, is probably, I would consider, the most unresearched area of basically what you would call Jewish penetration is into the Islamic world. And so we all get caught up into this Islam as a monolithic type mentality, and nothing could be further from the truth. There are so many groups and so many factions within Islam that only a buffoon would just say Islam this and Islam that. And so let me continue, and I know the break's coming. The Donma rise to power in Turkey. Many Donma, along with traditional Jews, became powerful political and business leaders in Salonika. It was this core group of Donma which organized the secret Young Turks. Oh, how about that commie outfit that's all kind of halfway big out here called the Young Turks? It's funny that they're all basically Marxist, isn't it? This guy, what's his name? I can't remember it off the top of my head. Uger or something like that. But yeah, the Young Turks, if I can't even watch these people. They're just so sick and disgustingly, basically, pinko, commie, disgusting, just like Marxists with Arab faces. And that's funny how they call themselves the Young Turks. And then you get into this group called the Donma, which organized the original Young Turks, also known as the Committee of Union and Progress. There's our word, progress. So we'll continue this on the other side. We'll open up the phones, 1-800-313-9443. Incendiary Radio. Now, here's where this gets interesting. So, the Young Turks, Committee of Union and Progress. There's our word, progress. Progressive. Okay, yeah. Marxist. Yeah. Gulags. Listen, so the Committee of Union and Progress, the secularists who deposed Ottoman Sultan Abdulhamid II in the 1908 revolution proclaimed the post-Ottoman Republic of Turkey after World War I, and who instituted a campaign that stripped Turkey of much of its Islamic identity after the fall of the Ottomans. Abdulhamid II was vilified by the Young Turks as a tyrant, but his only real crime appears to have been to refuse to meet Zionist leader Theodor Herzl during a visit to Constantinople in 1901 and reject Zionist and Donma offers of money in return for the Zionists to be granted control of Jerusalem. Here we see the Greater Israel Project already, it's already getting off the, you know, it's already getting off the ground. They're deposing the Sultan. You see? It's fascinating. Like other leaders who have crossed the Zionists, Sultan Abdulhamid II appears to have sealed his fate with the Donma with his statement to his Ottoman court. Advised Dr. Herzl not to take any further steps in this project. I cannot give away even a handful of the soil of this land, for it is not my own. It belongs to the entire Islamic nation. The Islamic nation fought jihad for the sake of this land and had watered it with their blood. The Jews may keep their money and millions. If the Islamic Caliphate state is one day destroyed, then they will be able to take Palestine without a price. But while I am alive, I would rather push a sword into my body than see the land of Palestine cut and given away from the Islamic state. After his ouster by Ataturk's Young Turk Donma in 1908, Abdulhamid II was jailed in the Donma citadel of Salonika. He died in Constantinople in 1918, 3 years after Ibn Saud agreed to a Jewish homeland in Palestine, and 1 year after Lord Balfour deeded Palestine away to the Zionists in his letter to Baron Rothschild. So, in 1915, Ibn Saud agreed to a Jewish homeland in Palestine. I find that fascinating. So these Wahhabis, they got no problem with giving away Islamic lands to the Zionists, the Jews, whoever, whatever you want to call them. So that's very fascinating to me. So one of the Young Turk leaders in Salonika was Mustafa Kemal Ataturk, the founder of the Republic of Turkey. When Greece achieved sovereignty over Salonika in 1913, many Donma, unsuccessful at being reclassified Jewish, moved to Constantinople, later renamed Istanbul. Others moved to Izmir,
Bursa, and Ataturk's newly proclaimed capital and future seat of Ergenekon power, Ankara. Some texts suggest that the Donma numbered no more than 150,000 and were mainly found in the army, government, and business. Amazing. However, other experts suggest that the Donma may have represented 1.5 million Turks and were even more powerful than believed by many and extended to every facet of Turkish life. See you guys on the other side. City Radio. Having a very interesting little underbelly of Turkey here, who's been bubbling up to the surface here. They're this anomaly in the European Union. It's a Muslim country. Well, it looks like a Muslim country. It's the former head of the old caliphate, the Ottoman Empire. One of the secret main conduits of Daesh, all the dumb Americans call ISIS, but they all call it Daesh over there. Get with the program. Israeli Secret Intelligence Services. Remember last week I played a 25-year-old clip off of freaking Book TV, Brian Lamb, C-SPAN. What does the Mossad call itself? Oh, Israeli Secret Intelligence Service. What's Britain's MI6 call itself? Oh, the Secret Intelligence Service. Turkey's called MIT. I guess Turkish Military Intelligence. Pakistan, ISI. So let's get back to the article. When we're talking about Kemal Ataturk, the Young Turks. Listen to this. Ataturk, who was supposedly himself a Donma, ordered that Turks abandon their own Muslim Arabic names. The name of the first Christian emperor of Rome, Constantine, was erased from the largest Turkish city, Constantinople. The city became Istanbul after the Ataturk government in 1923 objected to the traditional name. There have been many questions about Ataturk's own name. Since Mustafa Kemal Ataturk was a pseudonym, some historians have suggested that Ataturk adopted his name because he was a descendant of none other than Rabbi Sabbatai Zevi. Oh, interesting. The self-proclaimed Messiah of the Donma. Ataturk also abolished Turkey's use of the Arabic script and forced the country to adopt the Western alphabet. Modern Turkey, a secret Zionist state controlled by the Donma. Ataturk suspected strong Jewish roots, information about which was suppressed for decades by a Turkish government that forbade anything critical of the founder of modern Turkey, began bubbling to the surface, first mostly outside of Turkey and in publications written by Jewish authors. The 1973 book, The Secret Jews, by Rabbi Joachim Prinz, maintains that Ataturk and his finance minister, Javid Bey, were both committed donma and that they were in good company because too many of the young Turks in the newly formed revolutionary cabinet prayed to Allah but had their real prophet Sabbatai Zevi, the Messiah of Smyrna. In the foreword of January 28, 1994, Hillel Halkin wrote in the New York Sun that Ataturk recited the Jewish Shema Yisrael, Hear O Israel, saying that it was my prayer too. The information is recounted from an autobiography by journalist Itamar Ben-Avi, who claims Ataturk, then a young Turkish army captain, revealed he was Jewish in a Jerusalem hotel bar one rainy night during the winter of 1911. In addition, Ataturk attended the Semsi Efendi grade school in Salonika, run by a donma named Simon Zevi. Halkin wrote in the New York Sun article about an email he received from a Turkish colleague. I now know, and I haven't a shred of doubt that Ataturk's father's family was indeed of Jewish stock. It was Ataturk and the Young Turks' support for Zionism, the creation of a Jewish homeland in Palestine after World War One, and during Nazi rule in Europe that endeared Turkey to Israel and vice versa. Amazing, isn't it? An article in the foreword of May 8, that's the Jewish Daily Foreword, of May 8, 2007 revealed that Donma dominated Turkish leadership from the president down, as well as key diplomats. Hey, what's that sound like? United States, and a great part of Turkey's military, cultural, academic, economic, and professional elites. Wow. It's a worldwide template, isn't it? Kept Turkey out of a World War II alliance with Germany and deprived Hitler of a Turkish route to the Baku oil fields. In his book, The Donma, Jewish Converts, Muslim Revolutionaries, and Secular Turks, Professor Mark David Beyer wrote that many advanced to exalted positions in the Sufi religious orders. Israel has always been reluctant to describe the Turkish massacre of the Armenians by the Turks in 1915 as a genocide. Well, no wonder your buddies did it. It has always been believed that the reason for Israel's reticence was not to upset Israel's close military and diplomatic ties with Turkey. However, more evidence is being uncovered that the American genocide was largely the work of the Donma leadership of the Young Turks. Historians like Ahmed Refik, who served as an intelligence officer in the Ottoman army, averred that it was the aim of the Young Turks to destroy the Armenians, who are mostly Christian. Oh, where we see that? Everywhere. You see, it doesn't matter what guise these people take. Buddhist, Muslim, Catholic. They're going to go after Christians because it's just the satanic hatred that they have. The Young Turks, under Ataturk's direction, also expelled Greek Christians from Turkish cities and attempted to commit a smaller-scale genocide of the Assyrians, who were also mainly Christian. And so we've got to look at this as well. The Wahhabis, Takfiri, Salafis, these Donma. And so some of these folks are actually hidden, what you would just say, crypto-Jewish. And so you can see some of this Christian hatred that bubbles to the surface, and then somebody that could be a simpleton could say, oh, it's just Muslims that hate Christians. But if you look at this Turkish power structure, this should be an indicative to somebody that it's like, hey, wait a minute, we've got to look at all these kind of more whack job Sunni outfits and look for cryptos splattered in throughout, like some of the radical loony preachers and so forth and so on, because I'm not saying that there aren't just straight up, you know, Arab people or whatever that don't hate Christians and that don't hate whites. There's plenty. But when you look at strategic leadership positions and how these people always do this, no matter what society they live in order to move the larger society, kind of like an Overton window, I'm just saying you got to keep your eyes open because this is very interesting and this is deep thought is required here. It's not like just some simple knee jerk, stuff. Back to the article. One young Turk from Salonika, Mehmet Talat, was the official who carried out the genocide of the Armenians and Assyrians. A Venezuelan mercenary who served in the Ottoman army, Rafael de Nogales Mendez, noted in his annals of the Armenian genocide that Talat was known as the renegade Hebrew of Salonika. I mean, you just can't make this stuff up. Talat was assassinated in Germany in 1921 by an Armenian whose entire family was lost in the genocide ordered by the renegade Hebrew. This is Wayne Madsen doing this reporting. It's not like he's some rabid, you know, person looking for a Jew under every corner type guy. He just, you know, he's pretty middle of the road, and this is his reporting. This is fascinating. It is believed by some historians of the Armenian genocide that the Armenians, known as good businessmen, were targeted by the business savvy Donma because they were considered to be commercial competitors. It is not, therefore, to the desire to protect the Israeli-Turkish alliance that has caused Israel to eschew any interest in pursuing the reasons behind the Armenian genocide, but Israel's and the Donma's knowledge that it was the Donma leadership of the Young Turks that not only murdered hundreds of thousands of Armenians and Assyrians, but who also stamped out Turkey's traditional Muslim customs and ways. And so you see this dualistic war on the Christian and the, you know, the traditional Muslims, the way they acted. And so it's very, very complicated, but it's very fascinating. Knowledge that it was Donma in a natural alliance with the Zionists of Europe who were responsible for the deaths of Armenian and Assyrian Christians, expulsion from Turkey of Greek Orthodox Christians, and the cultural and religious eradications of a Turkish Islamic traditions would issue forth in the region a new reality. Rather than Greek and Turkish Cypriots living on a divided island, Armenians holding a vendetta against the Turks, and Greeks and Turks feuding over territory, all the peoples attacked by the Donma would realize that they had a common foe that was their actual persecutor. And so this article goes on. Let me just say this, American politicians and journalists whose knowledge of the history of countries like Turkey and the preceding Ottoman Empire is often severely lacking have painted the friction between Israel's government and the Turkish government of Prime Minister Erdogan as based on Turkey's drift to Islamism and the Arab world. Far from it. Erdogan and his Justice and Development Party, AKP, seem to have finally seen a way to break free from the domination and cruelty of the Donma, whether in the form of Kemalist followers of Ataturk or nationalist schemers and plotters of Ergenekon. But with Turkey's Independence Day has come vitriol from the Donma and their natural allies in Israel and the Israel lobby in the United States and Europe. Turkey as a member of the European Union was fine for Europe as long as the Donma remained in charge and permitted Turkey's wealth to be looted by central bankers like has occurred in Greece. And so, you know, you see this kind of struggle going on here in Turkey. And I got this other article from 2011. Now check this out. This is from on the Angrifan website, A-A-N-G-I-R-F-A-N. And Tuesday, November 10th, 2011, Turkey's Erdogan is Jewish? ? And it has a picture at the King David Hotel in Jerusalem with his Jewish classmate, Rafael Sadi. They studied economics together. Why is Turkey's Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan helped the USA and Israel in their attacks on Syria and North Africa? So remember, this is written 4 years ago. It's almost to the day. And so this is before Syria really cranked up bad. Why do anti-Americans in Turkey hate Erdogan's AKP political party. Allegedly, Erdogan and his wife are crypto Jews, secretly working for the New World Order. According to Ergun Poyraz in his book, The Children of Moses, Erdogan has spoken to the ADL and the American Jewish Committee. The American Jewish Congress gave Erdogan a Profiles of Courage Award. The Erdogan family has Jewish roots. Nesmetin Erkaban, a former prime minister of Turkey, claims that Erdogan's tough line on Israel is a facade to deceive the Turkish public. And so you see, it's really hard to say with this kind of stuff. You know, you just got to read it. You got to put it away in your memory and decide, hey, am I going to, which side am I going to fall on here? Erbakan criticizes Israel, accuses Erdogan of being part of a Jewish plot. He says, why on earth did Erdogan's AK party give a go-ahead to the membership of Israel in the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, and not block membership? Why did the Turkish government consent to multi-billion dollars worth of defense contracts with Israeli firms? Erdogan says 1 minute to Peres during Davos, but conducts business as usual with the Jewish state. This is hypocrisy. Now, think about this, and I talk about this a lot. There's probably some deal that's been made for greater Israel and then the reestablishment of the of some sort of Islamic state that's going to be fit somehow into the world government system. So you're going to have, and that's why, you know, there's a lot of analysts out here that believe basically that's why they've got to decapitate the what's left of the Islamic world that's not part of the Sunni controlled Rothschild, Rockefeller, Wahhabi, Turkish kind of axis, which includes Iran, Syria, and Hezbollah and Lebanon. And so think about it. Erdogan, the Saudis, they're in bed together. And they're in bed with the Israelis, okay? So they probably already, and then the Gulf state emirs and, you know, the sheikhs and so forth, you guys in Dubai and Qatar and Bahrain and so forth. And so basically they're probably all made a deal. Okay. Big, big Sunni caliphate going all the way from Turkey all the way to Saudi Arabia, sitting on top of, we'll let you, you know, you will let Israel expand its borders to a certain, you know, degree. Well, they've already probably worked this crap out. Maybe, maybe not. You don't know, but basically, so greater Israel sitting basically with the big controlled New World Order, Sunni Caliphate, the new Islamic State to sit on top. That's probably the deal that I can see right now. And I've went over this before. Anybody that has another idea, you're free to call in 1-800-313-9443. But let's get back to the article. Let's see here. And it's got a picture up here of Erdogan meeting a CIA Al-Qaeda meeting in Libya. So what did Libya do when they threw Gaddafi out? Established a central bank. Amazing. So a bunch of jihadis just decide, to go ahead and found a central bank. They overthrow Gaddafi and the first move they do is, yeah, let's go ahead and make us a central bank controlled by the city of London. Brilliant. Let's see. We got Wes in Idaho. Hey, Wes.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, Robert. Did I not hear you when you were substituting for Statmar show? You went into a big tirade against Christian Identity.
What do you mean by big tirade?
Well, You were saying you had no tolerance for it. You thought it was loony, very much like Mark Glenn of The Ugly Truth, another Catholic, if you perhaps know him.
I mean, I've read his stuff. Somebody was saying he's more Muslim. I don't know.
I think he was born in Lebanon.
Oh, okay.
He is. an Arab, but he has become a Catholic. I met him. I was kind of surprised. I went to a Christian Identity Church for a weekend-long conference, and Hisham Talabi and Mark Lynn and Michael Collins Piper were there. They're like the three musketeers. They very much stuck together. They were on radio shows together quite a bit. Anyway, I did not realize it until a few days after that Mark Glenn, this Catholic, hated, thought Christian Identity was a lunatic that you had to think that.
You know, Wes, I think people have selective hearing. I've talked about virulent strains of Identity. I do a lot of research actually into, let's just say the Leah Fail and, basically some of the tribal movements, you know, like the Danish and the heraldry of the flags and the coats of arms. And I talk about that stuff a lot. And so for you to take in that I'm somehow bashing the entire, let's just say, lost tribes kind of research movement, I'm not. But what I do bash is the virulent strains, which are basically fed, penetrated,
80% AR-15 project was a...
Well, let me hold on, Wes. There's the break. We'll pick it up on the other side. We're talking to Wes, who was one of the callers that called in the other day about, you know, this guy called in and basically trolled me, and then Wes semi-trolled me. But basically, Wes, I've done a lot of looking into the various groups within Identity, and I don't know how many you have, but there's such a bunch of feds and trolls and then questionable characters. That's why I talk about the virulent strains of it, because there's those virulent strains, which I think are penetrated by operatives, make just regular researchers, look bad in the whole thing. And that's kind of like where I was going with it. You know, I read Herbert W. Armstrong's book, Mystery of the Ages, probably.
Herbert W. Armstrong is not Identity.
I know, but he's partial. He's British Israelism, and he's a wing of it. You know what the difference is? Basically, he believes that basically Jews are still Judah and Benjamin, and he believes the 10 northern tribes are the ones that became, you know, some of the European nations like Britain.
I like to listen to Herbert W. Armstrong even before I was a Christian, but I didn't really understand his book, Judah and Israel and the United States and Prophecy.
Britain and the United States and Prophecy, yeah.
That's it. I did not really understand it when I first came across it when I was like 20, 25 years old. You know, it was 10 or 15 years after that when I heard of Pastor Pete Peters, Scriptures for America, who is a guy I learned quite a bit from him. I mean, that's, you know, he was not a Fed. But you can expect that most certainly the Identity movement, if you want to call it that, is most certainly got a lot of trolls in it, a lot of feds.
Well, let me ask you this. How come me as somebody that just from my own, I'm in my own world, how come I'm not allowed to call Rick Adams?
Well, maybe I was going a little far, but look, my comments that day were based on what I heard when you were substituting for Stat Miller, and which you went like I consider a real tirade against Christian identity. Like it has no basis, it's perverted or whatever. Is that not true, Robert?
I would have to re-listen to that. That might have been a while back, but as far as I know, I've really, let's just say this, I'm really uncomfortable with, exchanging one set of supremacists for another.
Well, you know, do you not see the white race under attack by the devil himself right now?
Do you listen to this program much?
Oh, well, I just want to hear it. Do you recognize him?
I guess the rest of my callers can vouch for me after I get off the phone with you, but yeah, I do. In every country that has been traditionally white, it is being attacked through biological demographic attack right now, yeah.
Second thing I want to make in my trying to build a argument here. Do you not recognize that the whole Bible is about a people called Israel? Is that not true? I mean, from, you know, just a few chapters into Genesis, we're talking about Israel, a special people. The whole Bible is about Israel, a very special people. Now, who in the heck are they?
Well, when you get into the New Testament, that shifts gears quite a bit.
Well, a little bit, but not totally.
Oh, okay. Go ye therefore into all nations, making disciples, and you know that's where I have a kind of an issue with some of the more virulent strains, because they don't believe that other people should receive the gospel, and so you should leave them in their own filth and.
There's a difference between redemption and salvation, I guess. But here I'm reading from a list of the marks of Israel right now.
Here's the break. Here's the break. Hold on a minute. Radio. We're finishing up with Wes, but where were we, Wes?
Well, I would like to read here just one more prophecy for true Israel. Receive strangers and refugees, Leviticus 19:33 and 34. Now, do you see Japan or China or any other country in the world that's being forced to accept refugees and strangers, and do we not do it a little bit better, more openly, more pathologically altruistic than any other country in the world?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of countries receive refugees. I mean, it's a weaponized system for us to receive them right now. It's a white genocidal system. But, you know, here's the thing where I'm getting at. A lot of people read out of the Old Testament a lot, but they like to ignore the new one. And it's just like, you know, Revelation 14:6 about the everlasting gospel to preach unto them to that dwell upon the earth, to every nation, kindred, tongue, and people. Revelation 7:9, a great multitude no man could number of all nations and kindreds, peoples, tongues. Revelation 5:9, every kindred, tongue, people, nation. Revelation 6:9, under the altar, the souls of them that were slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held, beheaded, is actually being used. What I want to ask you is this, and I got a bunch of other callers. Is a person that's received the gospel, let's say in communist Vietnam or in Nigeria and some, Boko Haram type, martyrs them, are they just spinning their wheels, or are they possibly going to get saved?
Once again, I believe it's a difference between salvation and redemption. And I'd like you to have somebody like Eli James on, who was on RBN for a while. I really kind of miss his program.
Yeah, you know who has him on a lot, Wes, is Aaron Dakins over on GCN, the Truth Traveler at night. He's on like almost every night with her.
With her?
Yeah, Aaron Dakins on GCN. I listen to it all the time.
Okay, she is Identity over on GCN?
Well, it sounds like she's pretty much embraced, the theological system.
Her name again, please?
Aaron Dakins. She's on Monday through Friday on GCN Channel 2.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I can find her archives. Go ahead. Go to the next car. Peace, brother.
All right, Wes.
Once again, I base my comments on what I heard on the Statmuller show. You on the Statmuller show.
All right. Later, Wes. Let's take Frank in North Carolina.
Yeah, Eli James. I started listening to him not too long ago. He's on every Saturday morning for 2 hours on Revolution Radio. And the thing that has attracted to me, because I'm not a religious person. I've always thought of myself as a, for lack of a better word, a spiritual person, because I talk to God a lot and I contemplate the universe, the meaning of life, justice, and all of that. And I guess I embrace Christian values. I always put my neighbor, people I don't know, strangers ahead of myself. I've always been that way, and I pay that.
Well, you know, Frank, if you really sum up the gospel, and Jesus basically is quoted in the gospels as saying this: the whole law, the entire law, rests on these two things: to basically love God with everything you got, and then to love your neighbor as yourself. And the entire law and the prophets rest on these two things. He simplified it for people. And then if you have the golden rule, which really ties into that second part, that everything is simplified pretty much into that, according to the words of Christ, by the guys in the, that compiled the gospels. Go ahead.
Yeah, the thing that, the golden rule, and I'm not talking about the one, he with the gold makes.
Yeah, that's the Rothschild golden rule. Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing that, attracted to me in recent years about Christian Identity, I never even heard of it probably before 6-7 years ago. But, I found that they were the, and I just had to, kind of go through the motions and kind of think, well, it sounds plausible what they're saying as far as all the religious doctrine. But I found that they were the ones that really the only ones that really seemed to have the balls to stand up to what the Jews, what organized Jewry in the world was doing. And Eli James, he sounds like a pretty reasonable guy. I mean, I can't vouch for anything he's saying as far as, all of his, religious doctrine and all of that. But, I judge people by their fruits. And, I always hear, well, not all Jews are Zionists and all that. And to me, that's a really a weak argument. Just like the one, well, it's not only Israel, it's also, America and all these other countries. I'm like, well, who the hell controls America?
It's really the interlocking network that really emanates from, the city of London, if you really want to get down to it, because Israel is basically a satellite of the city of London too. You see what I'm saying? It's the outpost of this criminal network, in the Middle East to do all their skullduggery down there. And so, it's like this expansionist little crime factory that the city of London cabal, which is run by the, Jewish banking, heavyweights, they set up Israel as a criminal outpost, but they also set this thing up for the wacko Talmudic, rabbis as well to have their, free reign in a state of their own. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. But they try and fool people, or you know, by making it sound like, well, it's just a bunch of old white guys. It has nothing to do with Jews or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And
let me ask you this, Frank. What did you think about the stuff I was laying down about that penetration into like the Turkish and the Islamic Ottoman world? See, people don't even understand that, how they're like, they're also dogs being wagged by their tails as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like the Jews infiltrate everything. I mean, it's like, I was in the Marines. I had no idea what I was doing. The guys in there that want to go kill Muslims now, they don't know who's behind it. They're, they're useful idiots. They're fools.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't know who's actually controlling everything, but people want to blame them, and I do blame them. I because they have no, they really, in this day and age with the advent of the internet and everything, they really don't have any excuse not to know, particularly the college educated officers and whatnot. But the thing is though, Zionism isn't my major problem. I mean, I understand, you know, with a lot of people it is, you know, the Palestinians, but I judge them by their fruits. You look at every evil thing that's going on in America, and you will find people that come from that tiny little minority that are pushing that agenda. Everything that rips apart the family, that destroys spirituality, everything that destroys innocence, purity.
Well,
of
you know, what gets, what
culture,
gets,
it's Jewish.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what gets me, Frank, is this. These people that tell you, don't say Jewish, say Zionist. Well, I'm like, Judaism, this Talmudic system, the Talmud was compiled in the 5th century. It got put down on paper, but this system was the very system that Jesus was going off on, the tradition of the elders 2,000 years ago. So Zionism is this kind of a new phenomenon, but this thing that the entire planet has been fighting is much older than Zionism. It's Judaism.
You know, another thing, you know, for somebody, an intelligent person, to make the argument that because of Operation Paperclip, because some defeated German scientists and high ups and military intelligence and whatnot, and because a building, some military barracks on the west coast from an aerial view, is in the shape of a swastika. To say that makes the point, that is so childish and absurd. I mean, that is absolutely ridiculous. My intelligence is totally insulted by that.
Well, I know, but I had to address that because I've been hearing this on the radio and all these different networks I listen to. Oh my gosh, this paperclip. Oh my God, the Nazis won and all this crap. I'm like, yeah, well, the Nazis got absorbed into this country where the Jews took over the banking system 30 something years earlier. And so what are we supposed to think that? You know what I mean?
I mean, you think of it though. I mean, I remember buying into it back in late 2005, early 2006. I remember buying into the Nazi thing. You know, it sounded plausible, and I'd always been told, well, the Nazis are the most evil people. So, I mean, it kind of sounded plausible, but, you know, I mean, I lived in barracks and stuff for many years. I mean, there's any number. Maybe the guy who designed that building, maybe he was some closet Nazi or Hitler lover or something.
Yeah.
But you know, that you look at that design for a military barracks, and you remember the formations we used to have to get into. That that design actually makes a lot of sense for efficiency of space.
Well, Frank,
you're gonna hang your hat on that. That's proof.
Hey, also look at the Denver airport layout. They say that's a swastika too. And so, you know.
Well, I'm not familiar with that. Now, I will say the Denver airport, I've seen pictures on the internet of all the weird, pictures and stuff. Now, to me, that's a whole nother thing. If all those pictures and the art that's in the Denver airport is all this death worship and all that, that does show me something. But just a geographical shape.
No, but I'm saying the layout of the runways and stuff, it's semi swastika like.
And that could be some Jew's idea of a sick joke too. I mean, we don't know.
Well, you know, there's that whole wing of research out there that says the Ashkenazis, you know, it's basically Eustace Mullins, he basically said this. He's like, yeah, well, the Nazis were clicked up with the Zionists, and that's kind of like a mishmash, you know, and you got to take some of that research and look into it and make a decision on your own, but, you know, so.
Well, the special forces are, you know, they're kind of associated with Zionism and world Jewry, but they don't know it. They're just a bunch of idiots. I mean, well, it just...
What you think of the drone pilots and the language they were using, it sounded very Israeli Defense Forces-esque.
Yeah.
I'll just say that.
Yeah, I agree with you. It does kind of have an Israeli tone to it. Those young Turk guys, I remember listening to them and, kind of following them a little bit in the very beginning, like back on MySpace and stuff. And pretty shortly, thereafter, I started getting the creeps from them, and I realized they were not on our side. And, you know, another thing, I think a lot of reasons some of them, maybe the old fuddy-duddies over at Stormfront and whatnot have a bad taste for 9/11 truth and whatnot, is because I did notice, once Obama became president, everything in my social networking got real quiet about 9/11 truth and all. Once Obama got into office, so what I'm saying is I think a lot of the 9/11 truth, unfortunately, was motivated by a hate for George Bush, and he's worthy of hate. I mean, I despise the guy, but I noticed a lot of it dropped off once so it really was never about the truth. It was only about going up. It was a way to go after George Bush.
It was a way to go after the right. See, the fake left was, as soon as their guy got to football, as soon as their guy got to name the quarterback, then he could go do whatever he wants. The drone program cranked up, go bomb all the brown people you want, because see, it's a brown guy doing it. And so he's a lefty. And so, you know, that's just the fake nature of the socialist, you know, kind of Bolshevik left. When a right winger's doing it, a white guy, but as soon as a black guy, a slick Pinko Commie gets in there, hey, go nuke the planet. It's liberal. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, you ever listen to Ivy West?
I don't know.
Okay, I was listening to her on Revolution Radio last night. She's a very interesting woman. You'd probably like some of her rants. Very, very interesting stuff. And, you know, I was listening to Joel Scals, and I like to listen to him at least once a month to get his take, because he seems very grounded and very conservative. He tends to kind of be a contrarian with what's going on and other analyses and whatnot. But he, you know, I agree with one thing that he says for sure. And I do believe, I'm not a religious person, but I do believe there is an otherworldly nature to all this.
Oh, yeah.
What's going on.
Yeah. Well, there's a spirit world. There's a spirit world where this, the evil is pumping, believe me. All right, man.
All right.
Let's take Jeff in Idaho. What's up, Jeff? I don't have a book report for you. Is Jeff there?
Hey, they clicked me in now. Can you hear me, Robert?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so remember last week about the book report?
Yeah, I don't have one for you yet.
Oh, okay, never mind then. All right, so here's the next movie that you need to study. Okay,
all right.
So the two fish are in the water, and the plane flight from Obama to basically, you know, get to the Paris conference. So the movie to watch from 2009, Dr. Parker is John Travolta, and it's called From Paris with Love, okay? Oh. And it's about terrorism in France that basically then goes to a world conference, and Hillary Clinton is in the long limo that basically gets diverted from her task. So we have art imitating life. Okay, now Robert, you must do this when you're speaking. If you're talking about the Delphi technique, you must use the word infiltration. If you're talking about sodomy, you must use the word penetration. We must get this clear, okay? We must define this so that we have clear communication, all right? This is terms now, all right? All right. So, okay, so I don't know if you've ever heard of a Bob Dornan.
Yeah, B1 Bob. B1 Bob Dornan.
B1 Bob was California. On 3 hours today on Dr. Parker's show.
Really?
Oh, you need to listen to the archives.
He was on today?
All 3 hours.
Awesome. I'm gonna check that out.
No, Dr. Parker was afraid I'd ruin his presidential campaign for next year with this 3-hour blurb. Okay. I mean, it was Hillary Clinton bashing. It was the death cult of, you know, like the abortionist.
Yeah, well, he's a hardcore Catholic, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm just but he was, you know, they were doing a lot of stuff, and, you know, Dr. Parker revealed that he was a prisoner of war twice.
Wow.
Once in Korea, and once in Vietnam.
Hey, hold on the line, man. We'll see you on the other side.
Yeah.
Go ahead and finish up, Jeff. I got one more caller after you, so try to wrap up.
Okay. So, so there was a patriotic, warrior romance today for 3 hours.
Nice.
And, it could kick off, you know, a presidential run for, Dr. Parker next year.
Awesome.
If things run out. Cause they were basically, out of B1 Bob, he was launching his cruise missiles at Hillary Clinton's presidency. Basically, he brought up all the Vince Foster stuff. When he walked to the Vince Foster, you know, crime scene, and he exposed it, and he went to the Speaker of the House and was talking about this stuff. You know, he said, hey, the blood down the spine on the back of Vince's body, there was no blood in the dirt, okay?
Yeah.
The seat was
That Clinton body count, anybody just type in Clinton body count and do reading.
But he said the seat was set up for a 5'6" person. He was 6'4", and he basically went to the penthouse where the Love Fest was, and then he found the place in Arkansas where the troopers would basically, you know, guide him. And those are the guys that got killed in Waco.
Yeah. Dead troopers,
okay.
Man.
Hey, next week.
Yeah, I'll try to get to it, dude. Thanks. All right, Tom in Florida, wrap it up, buddy. You get the last caller.
Yeah, good evening, Robert. Remember, with guns, we are citizens. Without them, we are subjects. I want to talk about Marco Rubio. He's also backed by a billionaire.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was backed by a guy named Brayman here in South Florida. Robert, I want you to know something. I want all your listening audience to know this. Bay County, the Bay County Commission here in Broward, we only have one or two white commissioners left on the commission. 35 years ago, we were in the majority. We are down to currently 10-11% of the population.
What is it now? Mostly Hispanic?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. And half of them don't want to speak the lick of English. But getting back to Rubio, yes, this guy is totally in the tank with these schmucks, and that guy's an imbecile. But